start the Heart Sutta. We will pay homage to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then after that, we will start the Heart Sutta. Okay.
南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨。波耶婆罗蜜多心经，观自在菩萨行深波耶婆罗蜜多时，照见无蕴皆空，度一切苦厄，舍利子，舍不异空，空不异色，色即是空，空即是色，受想行识亦复如是。舍利子，是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识。眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界乃至无意识界，无无明意，无无明尽，乃至无老死意，无老死尽，无苦集灭道，无智意，无得已，无所得故，菩提萨多依般若波罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想究竟涅槃，三世诸佛依波耶婆罗蜜多故，得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提故，是波耶婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，上咒是无等等咒，能除一切苦，真实不虚故说波耶婆罗蜜多咒即所咒业，揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will now chant the English version of the Heart Sutta. We will recite together. The Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajna Paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. Sariputta, form does not differ from emptiness. Emptiness does not differ from form. Form itself is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. So too are feeling, cognition, formation, and consciousness. Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristic. They are not produced, not destroyed, not defiled, not pure, and they neither increase nor diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, feeling, cognition, formation of consciousness. No eye, ear, no tongue, body or mind, no sight, sound, smell, taste, object or touch or dhammas. No feel of eyes, up to and including no feel of mind consciousness, and no ignorant or ending of ignorant, up to and including no old age and death, or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulating, no extinction, no way, and no understanding and no attaining. Because nothing is attained, the Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid, and he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nibbana. All Buddhas of the three periods of time attain Anuttara Samyat Sambodhi through reliance on Prajna Paramita. For know that Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken. recite it like this. Gate, gate, paragate, parasam gate, bohisattva. Okay, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So now we will recite the Theravada Puja. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikka padang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikka padang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara viramani sikka padang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikka padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majja pamadatana viramani sikka padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu. Okay, pay homage mindfully to all the Buddhas, Kuan Yin and worthy ones. Okay, very good afternoon. Oh, Man Yuan is here. You can pass the Ajahn Chao to her and the short notes. She is from the Saturday class, you remember? This is Sister Lee Siugek. She is staying here. She is in charge of this place. Okay, before we start, as usual, we will recite the opening verse. Verse for opening a sutta. You don't have the book, Mayan. Never mind, later. They will try to get you a copy. The verse for opening the heart sutta. Okay. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this one is very meaningful. What is stated here is very true. The unsurpassed and yet very profound and wonderful Dhamma, which is the Heart Sutta, is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. You know what is aeons, huh? Very, very long. Then, as a cultivator, we actually determine very strongly with our aspiration. Like Xuanhua said, I now see and hear, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Means Tathagata stand for the Thus Come One or the Buddhas. So the true meanings of this Heart Sutta. Okay, we will start first with the short notes. You turn to the 18th Heart Sutta short notes, dated 24 June 2012. Maybe before I start, I just make a small announcement. Next two Sunday, we have to cancel our class because I will not be free. So I make a note on the whiteboard. So for those who has not turned up today, maybe you can pass the word around. So next two Sunday, classes cancel. So they are today is 15. I think it's 22nd. 22nd and 29. Oh no. Oh correct, 29. 29. So you just make a note, Okay, we will now discuss the short notes. So if you have any question in between, you can just put up your hand. Don't have to worry. You just put up your hand, then I will allow you to ask. Short notes taken to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. Part 1 is recap and emphasis of the previous lesson. So this one has been emphasized quite a number of times. But here I put it in one more time. Daily mindfulness is very important to enable one to realize the real Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. Without this daily mindfulness, we are an awareness of all action and movements, including all of your feeling, content of consciousness, and Dhamma that arise and pass away from moment to moment within the present moment. The real wisdom cannot arise. So when there is no wisdom, one will be conditioned by one's delusion, whereas wisdom leads to joy, peace, love, compassion, and harmony. So when you have wisdom, your mind is very different. Your mind is at ease, always at peace. That's why you have peace. Then you have a lot of loving kindness, a lot of compassion. And because of your wisdom, you are very, very harmonious. There's a lot of harmony in whatever you do. You can harmonize with humanity, with the environment, with all the activity and phenomena that arise. So joy or happiness is the natural tendency of a happy mind who has the wisdom. So whatever that has the wisdom will be able to accord and create perfect harmony with everything. So all of nature will be in perfect harmony because you will have the wisdom to accept things as they are. Thing is just the way it is, cannot be otherwise. And born of wisdom, you will know how to accord and flow. That's why in Mahayana, they got this suiyan. It's a very good word, very meaningful. We flow and accord with condition, depending on the condition. We never resist, we never fight. Okay, so the first paragraph, any question? Okay, you don't have, we go on. How you interpret or perceive a life situation or phenomena at every moment of sense experience is very important. This is teaching you how to cultivate. Because every moment when you are conscious, when you are in your waking moment, living life, going about your daily life, whether you are working, career, or having a what they call housewife duties, or you are helping out somewhere, service or anything, or running around doing what you need to do because of your commitment, your responsibility, your duty, and all those things. So when you are in the midst of life, you need to encounter a lot of life situation. So the way you perceive that life situation or reality is very important. Because if you don't have wisdom, you will perceive it negativity. Then your mind react to what you perceive, or what you see, what you hear, or what you think, or tactilely feel, even smell, taste, and whatever. So the way you perceive a life situation when your sense experience comes to be is very important. If you have wisdom, then you are at ease, at peace. Then you do not react. And because you do not react, you will not suffer. You will not become afflicted. But human beings have a tendency to react. You act out of fear, worry, anxiety, selfishness, emotional negativity. These are all evil delusion. So all the action or speech or thought process that you arise through your mental reaction when you perceive a life situation with negativity, with lack of wisdom or understanding, then you suffer. So that's why I say, how you perceive or interpret a life situation or a phenomenon at every moment of sense experience is very important. When you have wisdom, then life itself is your teacher. The enlightened one will perceive all things with wholesomeness, without negativity. So develop the wisdom to be at peace with all situations, and learn to accept the reality of the moment, so that one does not have to react to or worry about life, but instead always act with wisdom, following the Noble Eightfold Path, to resolve all of your life situation amicably. The key word is amicably, without any suffering or negativity to anyone. So amicable solution to all life situation is very important. Amicable means not only fair to you, but to others too. You don't cheat, you don't take advantage, there is no selfishness, there is no fear or what they call negative mental intention to deceive or to cheat. You are being sincere, honest, and you have wisdom, understanding. You know the nature's law is such, it's not worthwhile to break your precept, to lie, to cheat, to take advantage. So this is how the one with wisdom and Dhamma, they will act. Whereas the deluded one, the heedless one, they don't have this understanding. They simply act. They are so heedless. They dare to cheat, deceive, commit all those karmic negativity leading to all the what they call suffering. So this is the important Dhamma that you need to understand. The next one is the four right effort. This one the Buddha talked about very often under the teaching. The Noble Eightfold Path got one path factor called right effort. And right effort, there are four. So this one is to be cultivated. That's why under the second turning of the fourth Noble Truth, this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated, not just understand, not enough. So you have to cultivate this four right effort constantly in order to purify your thought initially. Because under the seven factors of enlightenment, Or they call the other seven, the seven purification, Sata, Visuddhi, the seven stages of purification. Means you have to actually start from the first three, very important. They call the first one is Sila Visuddhi. Visuddhi is purification. Sila is morality, purification of virtue or morality. So that one you need to arise the right effort to constantly see your unwholesome thought, to constantly see your negative mental intention, your evil roots, the five hindrances of mind and all these things. So the Buddha said the four right effort you need to apply to purify your virtue, Sila Visuddhi, is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech and thought that has already arisen. Means the wrong speech, the wrong action and the wrong thought with the evil roots. Then the second right effort is, after you have the skill to abandon, you have the wisdom, you know that these are not conducive for the noble life, the holy life. So that's why you need to abandon them. Then you will have the mindfulness and the heedfulness developed through the training of the mind to prevent the arising of this unwholesome thought, speech and action that has yet to arise. Means the next moment, the next time, before you speak, before you act or before you think, you can have this wisdom and ability to prevent it from arising. Otherwise, once it has arisen, very difficult, because it will condition karmic. But at least, if you are aware that it has arisen, you have to arise the right effort, determined to abandon it. It is still better than allowing it to do what it like through your heedlessness. Then the other two right effort is the wholesome one. If you have not understood what this teaching is, what is right thought, right speech and right action, then you must arise the right effort to develop and cultivate all this right speech, right action and right thought. These are the three doors through which you commit karma. So if you know how to develop and cultivate the right speech, right action and right thought, you will avoid all evil. You will avoid creating negative karma via action, speech and thought process. So this right effort is very important to develop and cultivate them. So you can reflect, contemplate, develop the wisdom. Then you tell yourself, whatever I do, if I want to talk to my loved ones or to my friends, my colleagues, the skill in communication is very important, and most of it involves speech. But nowadays, modern technology, you can email, you can SMS, you can even speak through the whatever phone. So there are various media of communication. But you must have this wisdom and understanding to tell yourself what are right speech. Then you reflect, how can I speak in such a manner that I don't hurt people, I don't cheat people, I don't deceive people, I don't cause suffering to people. So you will think of how to develop this kind, gentle and pleasant speeches that leads to a lot of harmony, love, compassion and understanding. So to cultivate and develop this through right effort is very important. It doesn't cost you any money or any serious losses by saying thank you or sorry if I have hurt you. So these are very kind, pleasant, sincere and good speeches, very pleasant. If you really know how to ask for forgiveness or apologize or appreciate what people has done for you, thank you so much, you has been very helpful. Even your own children, your own spouse, If you appreciate what they have done for you, even your friend, your colleague, your in-law, your neighbor, or one, the way they reciprocate to you is very different. They know that you are being very gentle, very kind, very pleasant, and you really, really somebody who appreciate what people has done for you, and it makes a big difference. That's why this right speech, right action, and right thought are so important and so conducive for the holy life. So this right effort, you have to really put in a lot of what they call right effort to develop and cultivate them. Sometimes when you answer call, it's the same. You are a receptionist in the office, or even, let's say, a salesperson or what. The way you pick up a call, the way you respond and answer is very important. Even for those who are attending to the emergency line, it can make the big difference between saving life, calming people down, and make them confident or more stable in their emotion or what. Then you learn how to take down all the important information so that you can help them. Yeah? Call the ambulance or whatever and give the details so that they can prepare themselves before they go there. Yeah. So all this will lead to a lot of wholesomeness, goodness. And when people come to know that you have helped them, they appreciate, there's a lot of gratitude, then that is how our planet consciousness become better. That is how environment, the human being, the living being, they will be conditioned into more and more goodness and wholesomeness. When more and more people start to have this right speech, right action, and right thought, right effort to do the right thing, human consciousness will improve tremendously. Then we will have what they call the possibility of a new golden age, a new era for mankind, where all those heedlessness, negativity, the harsh speech, the very angry and very negative, hurtful speech that brings about disharmony, conflict, misunderstanding, can cease to be. Sometimes you don't know how to speak. It can be very, very negative. I realize human beings have the tendency to react. When you hear something, especially when you're at home, you take things for granted. Even your children, your loved one, your spouse or your parent or what, when they say something to you, because you are already not happy with something else, you tend to react. You never have a what they call the heedfulness or the awareness to really feel how they feel and to really understand them, because your mind is preoccupied with just because you are yourself not happy and you feel that they are actually creating problem for you. Every time it come to you, it's like in Cantonese they say ho fan. Then you just react, why every time you come and disturb me? Then we have this aversion, ill will, negativity, and these are all wrong thought, then wrong speech. So we need to have this kindness, gentleness, pleasantness, understanding, the quality of gratitude to appreciate what people has done for you, to feel and understand how people are going through life. Because a lot of people who don't have the Dhamma, they suffer, really suffer. And it's not easy to help them. Unless you have this noble eightfold path, then you realize you can help them. Because the way you actually reply and approach to the situation is so different. They can feel you. And anything, they like to come and discuss with you or talk to you. And this is the power of the four right effort. Once applied correctly, this is the beginning of purification. Purification of virtue, sila is the first one. So the fourth right effort is The right effort to maintain and refine upon whatever wholesomeness or goodness, like right thought, right speech, and right action that you already have. Huh? Let's say after a while, you already cultivate them. Or some people, by nature, they are generous. They are kind. So if you have this quality, you should refine upon it. Or at least maintain the good action that you always do. Yeah. So these four right effort can make a big difference to your life, can make a big difference to humanity, society, and the environment, and the planet's consciousness. So do not underestimate the four right effort. Yeah? So the first one of the seven stages of purification of mind is Sila Visuddhi. Yeah? Sila Visuddhi is what they call purification of morality or virtue. Then we move on to the second stage of purification. The Buddha teach three. After you purify your virtue, you must purify your view. Ditti Visuddhi. Ditti is view. You must have the right view with regards to all the laws that governs life and existence. When you have this right view, you will know what is wholesome and what is unwholesome. That's why Ditti Visuddhi is very important, purification of view, so that you don't have wrong view. You are not conditioned by your conditioning. Your views and opinions will not be rigid. It will be born of wisdom, understanding. Then the third one is Citta Visuddhi. Citta is meditative, the mind, the content of consciousness. You need to purify them too. When this content of consciousness has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion or ignorance, you must be aware. Then you must know how it arises and how it conditions you into negativity and causes all the suffering. Then you must know how to retrospectively reverse it, develop the wisdom and the four right effort to abandon, to prevent it from arising. Then to develop and cultivate all the wholesome consciousness, the wholesome state of mind. Then the last one is the right effort to at least maintain or refine upon whatever wholesomeness of consciousness that you already have. So these are the four right effort. You need to actually cultivate it, expand on it. It is a full-time cultivation. This one is the beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path. A lot of people thought meditation, you just meditate. No. The meditation as taught by the Buddha is this Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? Whatever you do, whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. You can have all the wonderful meditation experience, wonderful mind state, super concentration, super manifestation, but if you don't have Noble Eightfold Path, that is not the meditation taught by the Buddha. To have Noble Eightfold Path, you must have heedfulness, you must have sati, the first factor of enlightenment, to investigate into the Dhamma, to establish the right view. Then only you can condition your right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then only you know how to live life. Otherwise, how can you say you are enlightened? You think you are enlightened is different from you really enlightened. Because if you are really enlightened, it's different from what you think. Because a lot of people, after they go through very fantastic meditation, they think they are enlightened. And you know what happens? They become more egoic. Then they start to assume. Then they start to say a lot of very funny things. Then you realize they don't have Noble Eightfold Path. Their speech are very crude. They can still get angry. They can still argue with you. They can still want to insist on certain things. Then they can still be afflicted, understand? They still have very strong views of right and wrong. They still want to argue their case. So when you have all this coming out, then you realize what is enlightenment. you ask yourself this question, then you check the teaching. The Four Noble Truths is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Within the Four Noble Truths, which is the meditation, you ask yourself, which one is the meditation? The First Noble Truth didn't talk about meditation, is it? It talked about the prevalence of suffering. The Noble Truth that talk about suffering, is it? There's a Noble Truth that explain to you what suffering is. The Noble Truth of Dukkha. There are 8 conditions, the Buddha said. You have to confront them no matter who you are. But when you have not developed the wisdom, when you confront them, the tendency is you will suffer. You will become afflicted, miserable. That one is not the meditation. That is just telling you this Noble Truth of Dukkha. Then the second Noble Truth talk about the cause of arising of suffering. Also, it's not the meditation. It just explains to you why you suffer. Because of your delusion that condition you to grasp and cling and hold and believe that the form and mind is you. The aggregates of mind are you. They are like very, very real, permanent, atta-based, egoic personality. Again, it's not the meditation. The third Noble Truth talk about the possibility of enlightenment. He never tell you how to do it. So it's still not the meditation. But the fourth Noble Truth is different. You develop meditation so that you can develop the wisdom, the enlightenment, so that you can be free from all suffering. That's why you learn vipassana meditation, insight meditation, to develop the wisdom. So the fourth Noble Truth is what you are looking for. The Buddha said under the fourth Noble Truth, there is a Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. This is the one. This is the meditation. So always remember, whatever you do in the name of meditation, if it doesn't finally bring you back to the perfection of this Noble Eightfold Path or cultivation of this Noble Eightfold Path, is still not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why this four right effort is very important. This is just the beginning. The four right effort talk about the thought. At the thought level, you need to use effort. But when you go beyond thought, you use mindfulness, anasana. That's why it's sati. That's why there is no contradiction. Krishnamurti say meditation is effortless because when he talk about meditation, it's the actual meditation with the meditative mind, not using the thought or the thinking mind or the mundane mind. So right effort is required at the thought level. That's why you have right speech, right action, and right thought. But when you go beyond all this, means you have purified what they call your thought. Means you got no more delusion. You can see very clearly through your mindfulness or awareness the mental intention behind that condition, your wrong speech, wrong action and wrong thought, that condition your karmic negativity to cause you all the misery and the suffering, then you wake up, understand? Then you realize this four right effort is very important. But after you have exercised this training of four right effort to purify your thought, it will lead to sila visuddhi, purification of virtue or morality. Because the precept is all about mental intention, understand? Then when it comes to view, ditti visuddhi, purification of view. This comes from cultivating the Dhamma. When you have the right view, means you understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's like the law of karma. You need mindfulness to see them. You need to go through life to experience them. Then you understand the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. You can put to test, investigate into what he said. When the Buddha said, we are born of karma, held to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of karma, we can put it to test. investigate into it. That's why you need sati, mindfulness, heedfulness, the first factor of enlightenment. Then Dhamma Vichaya, Dhamma investigation is the second factor of enlightenment. That's why you investigate into all this that he said. Then you realize it is the truth. So beautiful. That's how things happen. Then you realize the Buddha is very wise, very, very virtuous, and very, very full of compassion and love for the living being. Then you have a lot of gratitude and respect for him. That's why your faith in him become unshakable. That's how your spiritual faculty become very strong. It become powers, balas. So when this fall into place, your virya very strong, because when the Dhamma stand up to investigation, your faith and your virya become very strong. That's how your sati become more and more established, more and more stable. And when your sati become very stable, the other two spiritual faculty of samadhi and wisdom, panya, will automatically fall into place. That's how you become very different. And when you have the five spiritual faculty very well developed, very stable, you become like a transformed cultivator. You can receive and understand the teaching very easily, and you progress along the path of Dhamma very fast. So because of that, those who have the spiritual faculty, they really, really progress very fast, and they receive this Dhamma, the Buddha's teaching, very easily. So the importance of understanding what the Buddha teach is very important. So when you have that understanding, all of the Dhamma become very clear. Then you know how to go about cultivating it and benefiting yourself. Then you can become a true noble one who will be a blessing to all later on. Okay, we finished the first part. Any questions so far? You don't have, we move on. Part 2 is the Heart Sutta. This one is just a summary. We are at page 35 to 39. So, Xuanhua talked about the three types of suffering. The first one is Dukkha Dukkata. Dukkha Dukkata means suffering within suffering in its most obvious ordinary form. So suffering within the physical form like birth, old age, sickness and death, it is already inherent because our physical body has this tendency. It's of the nature to go the way of nature. That's why the Buddha asks us to reflect daily. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, to decay, to age. For it has not gone beyond old age and decay. This body of ours is of the nature to be diseased when the condition is there, for it has not gone beyond. Then this body of ours is of the nature to die. Consciousness can separate and you call it death, for it has not gone beyond death. So this is inherent in the form. So the Buddha said, if the mind do not understand, if the mind, via delusion, cling and attach to this suffering, means you lament, you become afflicted, upset, and unhappy, then there is double suffering. That's why it's called Dukkha Dukkata. Means like the Buddha said, not only your form suffer, your mind now also suffer. So here, the double suffering is, that is not only your body is sick, your mind is also sick or afflicted. So this first suffering is quite easy to understand. The second type is suffering due to unsatisfactoriness of conditioned state. Sankara dukkata. Sankara, you know, is the condition arising, mental activity of your mind. The mental movement inside. All of your emotion, your content of consciousness, including the perception and the feeling, everything. These are the one that actually condition you into suffering when you don't understand them. So suffering due to mental attachment, via attachment to the sankhara aggregate of mind, is called sankhara dukkata. So they use the word unsatisfactoriness of condition state, because it's only your thought, anasana, the aggregates of mind, the content of consciousness. If you don't have wisdom, you deludedly grasp and cling onto it, thinking that feeling is you, perception is you, activity of mind, all the mental states and emotion are you. Then the consciousness that enable you to see, hear, smell, taste, tactilely feel and think, you think they are real, they are what you are. So through this delusion, if you grasp, attach and cling, then mental suffering arises. When you perceive your loved one, your possession, your wealth, you think they are yours. That's why you suffer. So mental attachment to what you feel, what you perceive, what you think, all your views and opinion, and what you become conscious of, can cause you all the suffering. So this is sankhara dukkha. The last one is suffering caused by change, viparinama dukkha. Everything is impermanent or unsatisfactory. If one cannot accept this reality or this universal characteristics or impermanent, then suffering will arise via wanting good things your way. Means wanting things your way. When things go your way, you're happy. When things don't go your way, you become afflicted and miserable. So this is craving, attachment. You only want the good. You create your own duality. There is a note. Suffering due to change. Page 43. The Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi Thera. So it's also explained there. So I read to you. Viparinama dukkha comes under the category of unsatisfactoriness due to impermanent or change. All the pleasant and happy feeling that man can experience fade away and disappear. As the Buddha said, even the feeling of a yogi or a cultivator or a meditator experiences by attaining the four meditative absorption called jhana also come under this category of viparinama dukkha, because they are transient or impermanent, anicca, dukkha, and subject to change. That's why it's called a viparinama dhamma. But the dukkha mentioned here is certainly not the pain and suffering that people in general endure. What the Buddha pointed out is that all things are impermanent. Because they are impermanent, they are unsatisfactory. So they suffer change every moment. And this change brings about unhappiness or unsatisfactoriness. For whatever is impermanent is unsatisfactory. That's why the Pali word is yadang nichang tam dukkang. That is, there is no everlasting bliss or happiness. Okay, we move on to part 3, meditation. There are 3 questions that people ask. The first one is, as always emphasized by Brother Teo, right understanding or right view are very important. If one lacks this, then how can one progress along the path of Dhamma? This is a very good question. So the way I answer is, according to the Buddha, the first of the Noble Eightfold Path factor is Samadhi. You know what Samadhi is? Right view. Without this right view, you cannot proceed with the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. See, I repeat it. Which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So the Noble Eightfold Path is the real meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because if your views are wrong, then your thoughts will be wrong. As thought, mental intention, condition, our speech, action, and the way we live our life, then all the other subsequent path factor of right speech, right action, right thought, and right livelihood of the Noble Eightfold Path will also be wrong. Hence, the importance of having right view or right understanding as the first path factor within the Noble Eightfold Path. So now you understand why this is put as number one, Samadhi. The 3 right view with regards to all the spiritual law that governs all of life and existence are very important, and they are the law of karma. The Buddha call it karma niyama. That's why this one is very important. Then the second one is citta niyama, the law of the mind, that talk about how you function as a human being, how your mind operates. That is the 12 link of paticca samuppada, se yin yan fa. Then the third one is the law of all other nature's truth. They call it dhamma niyama. Like the Four Noble Truths and all those things. So nature's truth, because they are all nature's law. Anything that can explain the way things are is the truth. The Buddha's advice via Dhammapada verse 183 to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind come from this first right view with regards to law of karma. According to the Buddha, each and every one of us is born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma, which is also one of the five daily contemplations that the monks are told to reflect on daily. Hence the importance of taking care of one's karma. So now you understand how the advice of the Buddha comes about. Because karma is most important. Each and every one of us, we are born of it. And we inherit everything that you create through karma. And they are the one that condition and support you every moment, every instant. That's why the Buddha said, you are what you are because of the karma. So you cannot blame anybody for your life situation or condition. So this part is very important. Then the other question is, how do we take care of karma? How do you take care of karma? How? By now you should know that. You must train your mind to be heedful, isn't it? We need to train our mind to be ever mindful and heedful of our mental intention, so that our actions, speech and thought process are always right and appropriate to avoid all the negativity of karma. We are keeping our precepts and cultivating their ennoblers. You know what are ennoblers? That make you more noble. Like, instead of only keeping to your precepts, we undertake the training rule of abstaining from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings, the first precept. Instead of only avoid killing or causing harm, the ennobler that you can cultivate is what? Not only you don't kill, you have love, you have compassion, to help and save life. That's what ennoblers are. Then the second precept, we undertake the training of the we undertake the training rule to abstain from stealing or taking things that don't belong to us. You not only don't steal or deceive or cheat or take advantage, you develop the ennobler. What is the ennobler of stealing and cheating? What is it? Generosity, donation. You not only take, you keep the precept not to take, misappropriate and steal, but you can develop the ennobler of generosity. You donate, you offer, you give. Understand? Actually, when you give to yourself, because this is the law of nature, law of karma. You reap what you sow. The more you give, the more you receive. When you give, karmically you give to yourself, because this is the wholesomeness that you have cultivated and done. So the friction of it is people will give back to you when there is condition. That's why you must have karmic understanding and condition. So do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You must have this right view. Then only you know how to determine strongly not to cheat and harm, because it will come back to you. What you do to people, karmic negativity, karmically it will come back to you. You reap what you sow. You are what you are because of your karma. So never worthwhile to violate the precept, to break the precept, to commit negativity. So you must train your mind to be heedful. Never be heedless. Never simply act, speak, and think with a deluded or wicked mind or heedless mind. So this part is very important. So this will enable us to be heedful, which is the first two advice of the Buddha. So when you are able to heed the first two advice of the Buddha through your training of mind to avoid all evil and do good, this is born of the right view, that understand the importance of karma. Because when you understand the importance of karma, you need to take care of karma. And to take care of karma, you need to avoid all evil and do good. That's how it comes about. That's how the precept come about. Precept is a guideline for you to avoid evil. Otherwise, you don't know what is evil. That's why you must reflect and contemplate. Why did the Buddha say, I must keep the five precepts? What are the five precepts? What type of people will break these five precepts? And then you realize the evil people. People who kill, harm, cheat, deceive, selfish, lustful, commit sexual misconduct, speak all the wrong speech, tell lies, very deceitful, wants to take advantage of situation, then they simply commit themselves to take all the intoxicant, the drugs, everything that make their consciousness very low, that affects them. So these are very important. So the third advice of the Buddha is to develop the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, especially the Four Noble Truths, to purify one's mind. So the third advice of the Buddha is purify your mind. So this is to develop the wisdom. So you have to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Actually, the Four Noble Truths. The Fourth Noble Truth is the Noble Eightfold Path. So you cultivate the Four Noble Truths, it will include the Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, question two. The last page. When we are on the wrong path, we are having wrong view, how can we come out of it? This is a very good question. A lot of people never reflect and go deep into this. Because not easy for human beings to come to know what are the right views, what are the things that governs life and existence. If you have not heard of the teaching, you may not know what this right view is all about. So the question is very very appropriate. When we are on the wrong path, we are having wrong view, how can we come out of it? So the Buddha has a very good way of teaching you, he said. So I answer this way. This is a very good question. Now you can understand the great wisdom of Lord Buddha in teaching us how to make sure that we won't have this wrong view or follow the wrong path. We are following his advice to sincerely cultivate the below, very important cultivation and aspiration. That's why every session we come, what do? We pay respect, we take refuge. These are all your devotional practice, your Buddha Puja. Devotional practice is to train your mind to cultivate all this good condition for you to develop your spiritual faculty, find spiritual faculty, so that you can receive his teaching, so that you can progress along the path of Dhamma, so that you won't get lost. So the first one is taking the three refuge, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, with very strong faith and sincerity. We are understanding is important. According to the Buddha, there is no refuge safe except in the Triple Gem, where the Four Noble Truths can be found to realize the enlightenment. So this is very important, because when we take refuge, means what? We surrender ourselves. Like we say, Buddhang saranang gacchami, means to the Buddha, I go for refuge. Means what? The Buddha is a symbol of the fully enlightened one. He is like us, as a normal human being. After his perfection and cultivation, he realized this Dhamma, this enlightenment. So that gives us a very strong confidence of faith in him. Understand? So because of that, we take refuge. Because like him, we can also become enlightened. So if you make this what they call very strong refuge, you are trying to establish affinity with the Buddha, the nature of all Buddhas. So which means wherever, when at any era or civilization, whenever you are born, anywhere, any place, any time, any civilization, if there is a Buddha, you will connect because you have taken refuge before. That's why you won't go wrong, you won't debate. Then the Dhamma is the same. The Dhamma is the teaching of the Buddha. If you make aspiration and take refuge to constantly seek the Dhamma, then wherever there is this teaching of the Buddha, the truth, you will connect because you have taken refuge. You are very sincere. You are full of faith, very strong in that confidence of yours. Then the third one is the Sangha. The Sangha here means the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, the Aryan Sangha. So because they are enlightened disciples, they also have the understanding, the Dhamma. So if you take refuge, you also cultivate affinity with them. Then you will connect. Whenever you have condition to arise, if they are around because of that refuge, you will have this ability to connect. That's why taking refuge is very important. Do not underestimate what refuge is. Do not think that, like the parrot, just chant. The Buddha want me to chant, I chant. No. The Buddha has a very deep understanding of this. You must have the faith, the confidence in him and his teaching and his enlightened disciple. That's why he called it the triple gem. You know what are gems? Gemstones are the most precious among the precious stones. So precious stones are already very precious, but the gemstones are the most precious among the precious stones. That's why they are called gem. That's why the triple gem. So if you take refuge, you create karmic affinity. You develop the karmic link. That's why whenever the triple gem is around, you connect because you have taken refuge. So refuge is very important. That's why when you seriously wants to cultivate the Buddha Dharma, the first thing the Buddha asks you to do is to pay respect to the triple gem, then take refuge, then keep your precept. All this is from the right view. That's how you start. Then understand his teaching. Avoid all evil, do good. Purify the mind to develop the wisdom. Then the second one is, towards the end of all our session, the Buddha always asks us to chant this. Ipmina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. So this aspiration is very important. The Buddha always tells us, by the power of all these merits, may we have the causes and condition to always avoid the foolish, but only meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized soon as possible. So this style of aspiration is very important. Punya is merit. Ipmina punyang kamina. By the power of this wholesomeness and merits that we have cultivated, may arise the causes and conditions for us to avoid all the foolish, meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized soon as possible. So this style of aspiration will guarantee you won't deviate, will guarantee you won't lose your way. So that's why when you chant with understanding, sincerity, and you commit yourself, your mind very strong, very determined, this will bring forth the way. You will not debate. Otherwise, very easy to debate, I tell you. Because the Four Noble Truths are very difficult to understand, especially the Noble Eightfold Path. If you misinterpret any of the teaching, you go the wrong direction. You can get lost. Especially sati, mindfulness. A lot of people don't understand what sati is, mindfulness is. So how can you cultivate if you don't even know or understand what that thing is? so you can get lost very easily. The other very easily to get lost on is samadhi. A lot of wrong view with regards to samadhi. They thought it's concentration, energy field. They thought it's all the great jhanas and all those things. You see, samadhi is not what they think. The Buddha's meaning of samadhi is very different. Sama samadhi. Samadhi is a very stable mind, collected, unwavering, not conditioned, free, and yet unwavering. Means every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, or think of something, your mind is unwavering, collected, not disturbed. There is equanimity, power, factor of enlightenment inside. So that samadhi is very different. A lot of people equate it as concentration, jhanas, and all those things. So there is no right and no wrong. But when you cultivate, you will understand what samadhi is. So the true understanding is very important. Otherwise, very easy to debate. Especially right views. If you don't have the right understanding of what the right views are, you can go wrong. Okay, the third question is very interesting. I think Cheng Hun asked this question. She said, you reap what you sow. So can this karma of you reap what you sow be experienced in this very life? The answer is, it depends on which chetana or determining thought moment the karma is being committed. According to the Abhidhamma, I use the word according, because this one, unless you are the Buddha, nobody can investigate and be very sure, because the thought moments are so fast, speed of lightning, very fast. So according to Abhidhamma, there are 7 determining thought moments for chetana or mental intention to condition karma. And if it happened during the first determining thought moment, then it can be effective this life, if there is condition for it to arise. Otherwise, it will cease to be. Similarly, for the one that happened at the 7 determining thought moment, it is only effective up till next life, if there is condition for it to arise. Whereas those occurring between the 2nd and the 6th thought moment, determining thought moment, they will follow you eternally until you become enlightened. So this one, it can arise for very, very long. As long as there is condition, it can arise. So even this life also, if there is condition, it can arise. Okay, we finish. Then we can go into the sutta proper. How much time do we have? Okay, we are at page 42, isn't it? So now we go to page 43. The verse says, across the sea of suffering, one leaves the revolving wheel. The rain disperses, heavens clear. Just then the moon is fully bright. Oh, this word, How you pronounce it? Chena. I don't know how to pronounce this word. Chena. The Chen source is the way substance. Among people, the sage, his undecaying golden body is rare in the world. Cast off life. What need of 1,000 years struck? Attain extinction. Why wait 10,000 kalpas? 5 dwellings end, 2 death disappear forever. Roam at will from east to west throughout the Dhamma rhyme. So this is the verse of the poem that Xuan Hua come out with. Then he explained. Commentary. Across the sea of suffering, one leaves the revolving wheels. Means samsara, suffering world. Sea of suffering, samsara. I think it translated from the Mandarin, kuhai, because living beings are like wandering in this ocean of samsara. You know what is samsara? samsara is the birth and death of all these living beings. So the sea of suffering. In Mahayana Mandarin, I think they all have this word, kuhai. A lot of suffering within this samsara. So the sea of suffering is just all suffering and difficulty. If you wish to cross beyond all suffering and difficulty, you must first be released from the revolving wheel of the sixth path of rebirth. You know what is this sixth path or not? Liu Tao Lun Hui. You see, the Mahayana got a very nice way of explaining the 31 plane of existence. They summarize into only the six rhyme. They call it the Liu Tao Lun Hui. Actually, this six rhyme I explained before is equivalent to the 31 plane of existence. You look at the explanation from the commentary. The God rhyme. Then the Asura. Asura, you know, demons. Then the people, human rhyme. Manusa. Then you got the animal rhyme. Then you got the hungry ghost or the peta rhyme. Then you got the hell rhyme. So these are the six paths that they talk about. So if you look, it is very similar to the 31 plane of existence. The four willful states are stated as the hell rhyme, the hungry ghost, the animal rhyme, and the asuras. Plus the human rhyme is the fifth rhyme. Then they got the devas or the heavenly rhymes. So this they call God, Tian. So their God includes the deva rhyme, the Brahma rhyme, and the formless rhyme. That's why it adds up to the 31 plane. It's the same. So when they talk about God, means the heavenly rhyme. So the God got three. They got the sensual devas that have these six deva rhymes within the sensual world, Kamaloka. Then they got the 16 stages of Brahma rhyme. They call it the form world, the form, the heavenly rhyme of form, 16. Then they have the four formless rhyme, Arupa Loka. So Arupa is the formless. They only exist as consciousness and mind. So this one, you add them all up. 4 plus 16 is 20. 20 plus 6, 26. 26 plus 5, 31. It's the same. So we move on. The rain dispersed, the heavens clear. Just then the moon is fully bright. So the commentary will explain. The time of release from the path of rebirth is likened to the time when the rain stops. The heavens clear, and the full moon is filling the sky with its radiance. The line represents the emptiness of all the five skandhas. So this one is to tell you, when you awaken or become enlightened, your mind has clarity, understand or not? Like the cloud, everything disperses. The rain disperses, the cloud disperses, heaven is clear. Then just then the moon is fully bright. That's why you have this, what they call enlightenment. So your mind becomes bright, clarity. It's no longer deluded, no longer clouded, no longer covered by the darkness. So this part is very important. The bright moon stands out upon the sky. There are no clouds for 10,000 miles. See? Means no more of this obstruction to cloud your vision. No more of these so-called clouds. Your mind is the same actually. If you don't have sankhara, if you don't have content of consciousness, there is clarity. That's why you must have the silent mind. That's why you must have sati. Then when there is sati, there is clarity. But you think a lot. These are like clouds, obscure you, create delusion for you to grasp and cling on to. Because when you arise a thought, what happened? When you start to think, what happened? You are preoccupied with what you think. So how can you be aware? How can you understand what is going on? So that one is like a cloud, distract you. That's why you say, oh, going to rain, dark cloud. or you cannot see beyond. Understand? You keep on looking, oh, this cloud very nice, that cloud very nice. Oh, this one like the phoenix, that one like what? You are preoccupied with all those obstruction. Understand? Then there is no clarity to see things as they are. The mind is not silent. There is no clarity. That's why you cannot awaken to the truth. You are deceived by what you see. You are being clouded. Your mind has a lot of phenomena in it. You have the mental phenomena. You have all the views and opinion and the conditioning from your delusion. So all this is going to cloud you, cause you a lot of delusion. That's why suffering. Okay, we turn to the next page. That is what you experience as soon as you give birth to genuine wisdom. See, when you become enlightened and are enlightened to all, then you have crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. This is the part. When you become enlightened, there is clarity. So the Chen source is the way substance among people, the sage. When you have been certified as having reached the first stage of arahantship, this is Sotapan, it can be said that your body is pure yang. In the I Ching Book of Change, this Mandarin word is what? What is the meaning? What is the meaning? Is it direction? No. You have to explain to me what this Mandarin word is. What is this Mandarin word? No. Combine with the source. Source. The Chen source. Yang substance. The first hexagon. This is from the Pakwa. You know Pakwa, hexagon. Represent pure yang substance. His undecaying golden body is rare in the world. When you have been certified as having reached the first stage, means as a Sotapan, that is when you have cut off the 88 category of deluded view. This wrong view, delusion, there is this Brahmanak Sutta. You heard of this or not? Oh, very long. Don't have to read. Too many wrong views. A lot of wrong views there. So according to the Sutta, Mahayana say there are 88 category of wrong view. So when you already at least enlightened to the first stage of sainthood, which is the Sotapan, he say, your body is flawless. It become like flawless gold. You know what is gold? Very pure. Not contaminated. No alloy. Very, very rare in the world. See? Even Sotapan is already very rare. Really? Not easy. But for those who know how to cultivate, it's not so difficult to. But really not easy. Because you compare to the billions and billions of unenlightened ones, it's still very rare. That's why he said very, very rare in the world. Cause of life. What need of 1,000 years of drugs? You know what is drug? Make you sleepy, make you hallucinate. So Emperor Xi of the Qing dynasty, I think this one is the Qin Shi Huang, isn't it? Xi Wang Ti, I think if I'm not wrong. 221 BC to 207 BC. Sought the Taoist, how to pronounce this word? Elixir of immortality. And even sent an expedition to the Isles of Peng Lai Immortal. Yet, you do not need to search for elixir for immortality. Just cross beyond all suffering and difficulty. And then if you wish to live, you can live. And you wish to die, you can die. Just as with Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma is the first patriarch from India to China. So Tatmo Tu Si, the very famous one, Bodhidharma. Birth and death will be your own, and Yama, the Lord of Death, won't be able to have anything to do with you. So all this, the ancient emperor, they have this delusion. They want to achieve immortality, so that you won't die. So they are very fond of searching for immortality, so that you won't die. In Mandarin, they call what? 长生不老. Immortality means you won't even get old, not to say you won't die. So this part is a delusion, because the form is not you. You cannot maintain this form. There are conditions arising. When conditions cease to be, the form and mind cease to be, there is no such thing as eternal life for the form and mind. Eternal life is for the eternal nature, never born. That's why it never die, because it's never born, it never get old, never get sick, and it cannot die. That's why the Buddha nature, the oneness nature, our true nature, the original nature, this one is the eternal life. It never cease and it never die. The essence of mind is always there. The only thing is living beings do not understand what this is. Okay, we go on to the next one. Attain extinction. Why wait for 10,000 kappas? You know what is kappas or not? World cycle. Very long. So, extinction is enlightenment. Cessation of form and mind. The realization of cessation of form and mind, or extinction. That's why the third noble truth is called Nirodha, extinction, or cessation. So this one is enlightenment. They call 不生不灭境界, no arising, no ceasing. That's why it extinct. Actually, the word extinct is not so appropriate to extinct means you die already, no more. You are extinct. So actually, the better word is cessation, Nirodha. The mind, the form of mind ceases to be. Like the candle, the flame ceases to be. Extinction is the third of the four noble truths. The third noble truth. Of suffering, accumulation, extinction, and the way. Actually, it's suffering. Cause of arising or suffering, cessation, and the path that lead to the cessation. If you can have your cessation certified, you can realize Nibbana. Having realized the way, you don't need 10,000 kappas, but can quickly attain or realize Nibbana without residue. This one is the true enlightenment without residue. Anupadisesanivaran. This is the Mahayana version. The five dwelling end, the two deaths disappear forever. When you have really crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty, you left the revolving spoke or wheel and have obtained an indestructible Vajra body. The two deaths disappear forever. Two deaths, you said. Does that mean that you have to die twice? No, Xuan Hua said. It refers to the two kinds of birth and death. First is the birth and death of the segmented body. And the second is the birth and death of fluctuation of your thoughts, the mundane mind. So the birth and death of the segmented body is ended by those who have been certified as having attained arahantship. When you are an arahant, you don't need to take rebirth. You don't have to come back. But to end the birth and death of fluctuation or the thought, bodhisattvahood must first be realized. Avalokiteshvara has realized bodhisattvahood. And so the birth and death of the fluctuation or thought is no more. So both deaths have disappeared. The five dwellings refer to the five dwellings of affliction. The Mahayana expanded on it. the five dwelling. Human beings dwell on this. That's why they have suffering, affliction. The first one is dwelling in views, which originally was called dwelling in the love of view. That's why ditti, view, wrong view. Then dwelling in the desire, the love of desire, the craving, sensual craving. Then you have this dwelling for the love of form. That's why when you still attached to the form rhyme, the form jhanas, you are still trapped. These are the fetters, the 10 fetters in the Theravada. So Theravada, they have what they call the 10 fetters. They are similar to this. This 5 is a summarized version of the 10 fetters. The 10 fetters are the one that trap you in samsara. You know what is a fetters, it chain you down. So under Theravada, what are the first 3 fetters? You have heard before in Theravada. What are the first 3? You all should understand, isn't it? Because you must understand how you can free from the 10 fetters, isn't it? So that you can become enlightened, isn't it? Craving is actually, they don't classify craving under that. These 10 fetters are the 10 things that chain you down. Craving is part of sensual desire, but it is not classified as that. You see, this first one is sakaya ditti. The first fetter is delusion with regard to this form and mind, atta. So they call it sakaya ditti. So self-delusion, that is the first one. The second one is your faith in the triple gem is unshakable. Because once sakaya ditti no more, you realize the Buddha's teaching is so wonderful, so beautiful. That's why you got no more what they call delusion. Then your faith in the triple gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha become unshakable. It become powers, balas. Then the third one is you don't have this delusion to believe what people tell you. You will not hold on to all those rites and rituals that people tell you. You know what are the rites and rituals? People always come and panic you. When you die already, you will become hungry ghost, you will become this. That Sotapan cannot believe you anymore because he knows it's anatta, nobody inside. No one born, no one die, no one sick, no one. It's just form and mind, condition arising, cause of phenomena. You grasp, you cling, you suffer. He very clear. Then you go and tell his spirit, he say you forget about it because there is no more this delusion. So these first 3, they have classified under dwelling in views, all the wrong views. Then the next one is, the fourth factor is sensual desire. Sensual desire and ill will. So this is the, what they call, fourth and fifth factors. So love of desire. Desire can be positive and negative. So positive is sensual desire, negative is ill will. So this one cover the next 2. That's like 3 and 4. Then you have this attachment to form and formless jhana. That is the next fetters. Then after that, they have what they call, the other one is, the Buddha said, you can still have what they call restlessness of mind. Your mind can still be restless, even as a anagami, third stage of sainthood. Then there is another one. You can have this minor conceit, mana, they call it mana. Like, even when you are in the first stage, second stage, and third stage, Sotapan, Sakadagami, and Anagami, you can have this very minor conceit. Like, you know it's very difficult to become enlightened. Then you can still have this very subtle conceit inside. You are already enlightened, others not enlightened yet. But you know there is no atta, nobody enlightened. But that minor conceit is still inside there, unless they become arahant. Now, when they become arahant, that one also rooted out. So that minor conceit is with them. And the last one is ignorant. The real ignorant. Ignorant of all the other truth. So these 10 fetters are very important. The Buddha explained. He said, to be a sotapan, even the first stage of sainthood, you must sever the first three. Sakkaya ditthi, faith in the triple gem. No more wrong view with regards to rights and rituals. These three fetters must sever. Actually, once you sever the first one, Sakkaya ditthi, the other two, more or less, automatic will go. Then he said, to be a Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, you know what must you do? You must attenuate or lessen the next two fetters, sensual desire and ill will. If you can attenuate or lessen it, then you can become a Sakadagami. That's why even after you become a Sotapan, you still got sensual desire, you still got craving. Understand or not? You still can get unhappy. That's ill will and aversion. It's only when you become a Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, then you are less prone to have sensual desire. Your senses are more, restrained. Your desire or the senses become like attenuated. It does not lure you so strongly anymore. Then your anger also less and less attenuated. But you can still have negative emotion, unhappiness. It's only when you are an anagami, the fourth and the fifth fetters totally severed. Means an anagami, third stage of sainthood, no more sensual desire, no more anger. But they can still attach to the jhanas, the form and the formless jhana. So that's why to be an arahant, the last five fetters only go, then you become an arahant. So this five dwelling is the same as the 10 fetters. Okay, I go on a little bit more. Those five ways of abiding in love cause attachment which change into five kinds of affliction. Avalokiteshvara make the five afflictions cease. And from that follows the last line of the verse, to which we should pay a little attention. Roam at will from east to west throughout the Dhammaraya. This one is very interesting. When you are completely liberated, free, enlightened, then if you take the Bodhisattva way, you can roam from east to west throughout the Dhammaraya. You can come anytime, go anytime. That is the reward for those going that way. But it's a very long path. So Rome indicate ease, freedom, and being very, very happy, Anasana, because you have the Dhamma already, you are already enlightened. But you choose to come back to help the living being. So in what way? You can travel wherever you wish, see? At will, from east to west. You can go to the Western Paradise anytime you want, or you can travel to the East, to the crystal world of Asoba Buddha. You know who is in the East? The medicine Buddha, Yao Sifo. He is the Eastern one. There is even less problem about going to this suffering Saha world right here. This is Sakyamuni, Sahawa. You have avoided the troublesome preparation of applying at a counselor for a visa. You just wish to go and then you go. So this one, no visa needed. You can just go. Not just to the east and west, but north and south, up and down, in the 10 directions all around. The whole Dhammarime. You know the Dhammarime. Dhammarime is not your 31 plane of existence. Dhammarime go beyond your 31 plane of existence. They have the rhyme of the enlightened ones. That's why they have what they call the sainthood rhyme. Means the sound hearer, those who enlighten through hearing the sutta, the sound, the teaching as taught by the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, those who are enlightened through the Four Noble Truths. Then they got the seven Dhamma rhyme. You see, you got the six lower rhyme. Just now the six path. 31 plane of existence, remember? The four willful state, the human rhyme, then the deva, six. The seven is the sound hearer. Sound hearer are the sainthood. Sotapan, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahant. Then after that, you got the seven rhyme. The eight rhyme. The eight rhyme is rhyme of the conditioned enlightened one. You heard of conditioned enlightened one? They enlighten not through the Four Noble Truths, through realizing the condition, the 12 link, paticca samuppada, dependent origination. So these are the one they call paccheka Buddhas. Sometimes they are able to become enlightened through their own understanding without the Buddha. They call it the silent Buddha. The silent Buddha. Paccheka Buddha doesn't mean that they cannot teach. They can teach, but they don't have Buddha sasana like the Buddha. Understand not? Then you go one more rhyme up, the nine Dhamma rhyme. These are the rhyme of the Bodhisattvas. They call it the Bodhisattva rhyme. Pusa Fa Jie. The seven rhyme is Sen Wen Fa Jie. Then the eight rhyme is Yen Fa Jie. Yen, Yin Yen, Yen. The condition enlightened one. So when the Buddha is around, they call Yen Jiao. There is condition for it to become enlightened through the dwelling. But when the Buddha Sasana is not around, they call Du Jiao. Means they realize by themselves on their own. Then the last one is the rhyme of the Buddhas. So all these 10 Dhamma rhyme, you can roam, you can go. Okay, we go on. Wherever you want to go, you can go, and you are never unwelcome. To roam at ease, to roam at will, from east to west throughout the Dhamma rhyme, is to be genuinely happy, genuinely carefree, truly at ease. 自在, That's why 观世音, 观自在, truly free and equal. It is the truly real and unequal nature of the Dhamma rhyme. When the five dwelling has been ended, or the 10 fetters, and when the two death disappear forever, this kind of freedom is realized or attained. Okay, at least we finish this chapter, so we will stop here. Okay? We will take about three or four minutes break. Okay, we can start the second session. This will be the meditation session. I think everyone is here before. You know how to meditate already. So it's very easy. So if you want, you can start your meditation immediately. Then for those who are new, those who need instruction and guidance, maybe I can guide you along as how you can train your mind to develop the ability to become peaceful, silent, and aware within. This is to train the mind to be heedful, to have heedfulness or apamada. And the first training that you need to do is to use the mind sweeping method, combined with metta to decondition your heedless thinking mind. Because throughout the day, like the Buddha explained, human being has a lot of mental hindrance. The five mental hindrances are so active because you think a lot. And through the thinking, you create a lot of hindrance of mind that prevents you from becoming peaceful. So these are the ones that prevents your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and silent inner awareness. So because of that, you have to reverse all this heedless thinking that you have habitually developed throughout the day when you are going about your heedless living. So the mind sweeping method train you to feel no more thinking. That's why when you feel and relax, you decondition the mind from the heedless thinking. Then your mind develop more strength of silent inner awareness. When you feel and don't think, you are quiet. Then the mind sweeping method also has this added advantage. You can train your mind to be at the location you want it to be. You want it to be at the forehead, it's at the forehead. You want it to be at the heart, it's at the heart. So this sweeping training is very important. So I will give you some basic instruction to develop it. You just make sure you have a relaxed body and mind posture. Relax your physical body, relax your mind. Tell your mind you are here to meditate, so do not allow any thought to distract you or any fear, worry or anxiety to condition you into the heedless thinking. You just talk to the mind, not now. Allow me to have the space and peace to meditate for the next half an hour or so. Then after that, you silence your mind, close your eye, make sure your backbone is straight. Then you can feel, use your mind to feel. Feel your forehead, feel. When you can detect any tension, tightness or stress within, you just relax it. Use your mind to relax it, relax every part of it. Relax, relax, and feel it soothingly relax your forehead. Then after that, you move your attention down to your eye muscle. After a tired day, your eye muscle, they are quite tired. So again, you relax them all. Feel them soothingly relax. Then after the eye muscle, you move on to feel your facial muscle. Try to relax as much as you can your facial muscle. For those who are new, maybe you may find it not so easy to relax your facial muscle. But you can combine with metta or loving kindness that the Buddha teach. The Buddha said, you visualize yourself smiling, having a radiant smile, facing a mirror. There is a lot of joy in you. The joy and happiness will make you relax. Because when you are able to smile, you are happy. When you are happy and with joy, you are relaxed. That's why metta can help. Then after that, you continue to radiate loving kindness to your own form and mind. You can recite as follows. May I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your body and mind, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your physical body and your mind. Every cells within, all of your entire being, the well-being and happiness within your form and mind. You can repeat it a few more times. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness within your entire being, every cell of it. It will make your mind state very wholesome, fully charged with metta and very positive. Then you radiate a lot more kindness to yourself. May this body and mind of mine to be free from all suffering. be free from all physical and mental suffering. May two, be free from all danger. May my thoughts too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it be without fear, worry and anxiety. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy. May all beings be well and happy, well and happy. Wish for the well-being of all. Then after that, you can read this metta to somebody you love or you care for a lot. May my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy. From your heart, you radiate to them. You can visualize them smiling and radiate to them. Then you can also wish them free from all suffering. May my loved ones too be free from all suffering, free from all physical and mental suffering. May he or she too be free from all danger. May they too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May no harm come to them. May they have no negative thought, no fear, no worry, no anxiety, and no unhappiness. May there be love, may there be joy, may there be peace around. Then you can also radiate this metta to all your Kayana Mitas within this vicinity. May all my fellow Kayana Mitas, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. Radiate from your heart to them. May they too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May they too be free from all danger, free from all suffering, free from all physical and mental suffering. May there be peace, may there be love, and may there be joy throughout. Then you can also radiate this metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, and all beings throughout the entire existence, the whole of our planet, our solar system, our galaxy, and this whole entire universe, may we all too be well and happy, well and happy, well and happy. Feel the well-being and happiness and radiate to all beings. Then you can continue to wish them. May all beings throughout the entire existence too be free from all danger, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be joy, and may there be peace throughout. And may all beings be well and happy, well and happy. Then you can come back to your facial muscle. By then, you should be more calm and more peaceful and more relaxed. Then you can continue to feel. Make sure that it is completely relaxed. Then you feel your neck, your shoulder, your hand back to shoulder. Relax every part. Then you feel your heart, your chest. This is a very important location within your body. This is where your heartbeat arises and passes away. The seat of consciousness arises and passes away. The life force that arises and passes away. So you just silence your mind and feel. If you can feel any heartbeat or vibration within, you just silence your mind and stay there. But if your sati or mindfulness is still not developed, you are still not sensitive enough, then you just relax every part of it. Feel the heart and relax every part of it. Then you can move down to feel the stomach. Again, relax every part. Then move down further to feel the abdomen and relax every part. Then you feel your buttock, relax every part. Feel it soothingly relax. Then your leg, relax every part. You can reverse the whole of this mind sweeping method process. From your leg, relax, buttock, relax, abdomen, stomach, relax. Then your heart, feel it and relax every part of it. Then your shoulder, relax, hand, relax, back to shoulder, neck. Then facial muscle, relax every part. Then after that, your eye muscle, your forehead. After you have done this, you should be more calm and more peaceful, ready to train your mind to develop the mindfulness of in and out breath. Or the Buddha call it anapana sati. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So you train your mind to be mindful of the in and out breath. The in and out breath is always in the moment with us. So if we can silence our mind to feel the breathing, like you feel your forehead, you just silence your mind and feel. The moment the mind detects the breathing, then you develop the anapanasati, like what the Buddha teach. Breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. The mind and the breath in harmony move as one without thought. And that is sati. So train your mind this way. Initially, if you are still new, there is a tendency that the mind heedlessly wander off. It will think a lot, but never mind. Patiently bring it back and train this mind. If you are patient enough, the anapanasati will come. The mindfulness of this in and out breath will come. It will develop into what they call piti. Piti is a spiritual calmness, spiritual joy, or spiritual rapture that you can feel. The mind is very peaceful, very quiet, and there is this joy, meditative joy, or spiritual calmness or rapture. Then when you continue to train, this can stabilize to become sukha or bliss. Then it can become very quiet and very still. It accumulates in the pasati. Pasati is a tranquil mind, a very calm state of stillness of mind. So when you are able to develop all this, you continue to relax and just be mindful of this in and out breath, anapanasati. Then after that, later on, the mind will silent by itself. The breathing will become very subtle, like no more breathing. Then you can try all those things that the Buddha taught. Before the stillness of mind happens, you can develop the anapanasati by developing more calmness to actually experience all the calm state that arise. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, experiencing the entire bodily formation. Breathing out, experiencing the entire bodily formation. Then when piti arises, breathing in, experiencing all of the piti, the calmness, the joy within. Breathing out, experiencing all this. Then similarly for sukha, pasati. Then after that, you continue to train this mind until it's very stable. Then it will become very subtle, like very little or no breathing. When that happens, do not panic. Do not do any of those sitting and touching. You just silence your mind and stay at the heart. Relax and aware. Then your mind will start to develop sati on its own. It will develop the higher sati or more refined sati to bring about the apamada or heedfulness of mind. When the mind is in sati, you have apamada or heedfulness. Then technically you don't have to train anymore. By then you don't need the object of meditation anymore, technically. If the object of meditation is there, the subtle breathing also come back to you. That breathing, which is very subtle, can also be detected. And you will feel very different because the sati that is developed, the higher sati, more refined sati, it will be like something magnified. The very subtle movement is like magnifying to something very, very different. And you can actually be aware of it. That when your mind is in sati, you can experience everything that goes on within your form and mind. Wherever you reside your mind, you locate your mind at any place, it can feel the vibration there, everything that is going on there. You become very sensitive. That's why when you are at the heart, you can feel your heartbeat without the stethoscope. You can feel any part of your body, the vibration, everything. You can like investigate into them and understand what is going on. Then when you continue to silence your mind, your real meditation will start to operate. Then you will understand clearly who you are, what you are, how your mind arises and passes away, how the aggregate arises and passes away, how they condition you into what you are. So all this, you will witness them within your own form and mind. Okay, I will allow you to meditate on your own. I will ring the bell in the next 10 or 15 minutes time. Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. You have to try to maintain this meditative state of heedfulness, where the mind has already been trained. Any amount of calmness, stability of mind in sati or mindfulness, you must try to maintain this awareness, this silent mind for as long as you can. Then the real meditation only starts when you can stabilize this training of the mind to be heedful, to be aware, to be mindful. And you have to use this mind to live life, to really cultivate the meditation, the four foundation of mindfulness, followed by the cultivation of the Four Noble Truths. Excuse me, I need to drink some water. Because the daily mindfulness is very important, like we went through just now. The mind that is trained has this clarity, has this ability to be aware, mindful. And this is the mind that can be heedful throughout the day. It can be aware of everything that is going on. All of action and movement together with all of your experience of your mental feeling, your mental states, your mental content, all of your mental activities that is going on. So this awareness or mindfulness that you have developed and trained is very important. You use it to be aware of all your mental intention so that you can cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Alright, it's the four right effort that we went through just now. Okay. With that, maybe we will start the Q&A or reporting session. Make full use of this session to report whatever meditative experience that you have. Then together with this reporting, you can also ask me whatever question that you might want to ask with regards to the meditation or the teachings of the Buddha, and how you can apply what you have learned and together with the teaching to help you understand the cultivation, to help you understand what life is, and at the same time help you free your mind so that you can overcome all your life situations, problem or whatever that is disturbing you. Okay, now we open it up. Anybody wants to report their meditation? Don't be shy. Just put up your hand. Or you got any question you can ask. Yeah, Dr. Zheng, you should reply. Or maybe report your meditation first. Don't worry about how the meditation is on the mic.
Hello?
Yes, can hear you.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah, clear, yeah.
Dear brothers and sisters in the Dharma, so I've been following this Brother Teo's meditation classes, I think almost 19 weeks almost. 5 months.
Yes.
So
you just report how you developed the meditation just now, or you can share with us whatever you want to share. No problem. It's up to you. Then after that, with whatever question that you want to ask.
I can feel the calmness.
Okay, good.
And then I improve. Each morning I can sit for an hour.
Oh, very good. Sadhu.
And I felt light-hearted.
Oh, very good. You feel very at ease, very light-hearted. Like your mind is very light. That is a good sign. That is a good sign of your mind that is without problem.
there are problems, but the mind not so much affected.
Yes, not like before. Very heavy, carrying a lot of things. Worry and all those things. So now when you are meditating, during that period, your mind can relax, can be at ease, can feel the lightness, the calmness. More important is the calmness. When the calmness comes, it's less thinking, less heedless thought. And because there is less thinking, the mind settle down and become more peaceful, more calm. Then through that state, you can have better clarity. That's why the calmness will lead to a calm mind. The calm mind will lead to the clarity of mind. Then after that, did you try the daily mindfulness? After your meditation, did you try to maintain that calmness?
Yes, yes.
Ah, very good.
I like to read a lot. Sometimes
good.
Also, I went into torpor. Sometimes
never mind, it's okay. The sloth and torpor initially can come. Sometimes it's because our body is tired. If it's because your body is tired and you are aware, then you just go and rest or lie down. Then sometimes it's because the sloth and torpor come and test you. The mind, for no reason, all of a sudden, it always happens to meditator, cultivator. You remember this. Especially after you have stabilized your meditation, your sati, your mindfulness, your heedfulness, then like you are very stable already. Then for no reason, suddenly, one day, it can be after a few months, you like very, very beautiful. You have developed that training, the mindfulness, everything. Then suddenly one day, this mind starts to become funny. The hindrance like come back, especially the sloth and torpor. For no reason it come. Actually that one is a test. When it happened, if you don't know how to confront it, you don't know how to get away, you will get stuck there. Then it will come and test you again and again. You can continue your reporting, don't worry. Let him continue, he haven't finished. So the daily mindfulness you can do, The daily mindfulness you are able to do.
I feel lighthearted, and then I don't look for detail.
No need to look for detail.
Very smooth, but some detail I don't really care.
No need to see. You just relax and just be normal. Be a normal person. But now you be normal and just aware. Understand? Aware means you don't try to be aware. Understand? People who go for detail is trying to be aware. Understand? Like I am aware of everything. No, not like that. You are naturally aware. Understand? The awareness is a general clarity type of open awareness. And that awareness can be with anything that your mind is with. Understand? If it's the movement of the hand, the mind and the movement as one. Then if it's something you see, the mind and the phenomena as one. Understand? That's why you can see them all. So that mindfulness is because the mind is already in sati. So when the mind is in sati, anything that you see, it perceives, the mind is in sati. Understand? The mind and the phenomena move as one. That is the real awareness. You don't try to be like want to be mindful of all the detail. That one is focused awareness, and that is not natural. That is not natural. the natural one is you are very at ease. You just move and flow with everything. The mind is just silent. Then you just go about doing. Then thought can arise, no problem. But you are aware because it is conditioned by memory. Because sometimes when you perceive something, it creates the condition for a certain thought to arise. And when it arises, your mind is aware. That's why whatever that arises, your mind can be aware. But it will only be able to aware of one thing at a time. Always remember, although it's very fast. But if you are aware of this, you cannot be aware of other things. That's why mindfulness actually got nothing to do with absent-mindedness. The actual mindfulness, when you are mindful of the thought, definitely you cannot be mindful of other things, understand not? When you are mindful of the movement of the environment, then you cannot be mindful of other sides' movement, understand not? That's why, forget about when you, like, forgot something. They always say this, I am not mindful, absent-minded. No, nothing to do with that. The actual sati is, when you are mindful of that phenomena, your mind can recollect because you have gone through that awareness, understand not? That mind together with that phenomena. That's why when I'm mindful of how my hand take the purse out and where I put it before I go to sleep, the next morning I can recall where the purse is, understand not? But the trouble is most people, they are not mindful of where they put their car key, where they put their purse. They always cannot find. Then sometimes they like forgot. If you want to remember, you make it a point to be aware. When you take the thing, your hand fully aware, you feel it. Then you move with your awareness, you see it. Then you can recollect, recall. Because the awareness of it has gone through your mind. Then there is a awareness that allows you to recollect. That is the meaning of recollection. It doesn't mean that you have to be aware of everything. Nobody in this world can do that. Understand not? Because your mind, one thing at a time. When you are aware, heedful, you are not lost in thought. When you are lost in thought, you are no longer heedful. Then when you are heedful and aware, you can only be aware of certain aspect of the phenomena, whatever you want. But if there is a general type of awareness, then you can see all of phenomena. That's why I always tell you, you will observe your physical phenomena, your mental phenomena, and nature's phenomena, and everything flow, because your mind is in sati. When your mind is in sati, you are aware that mind and the phenomena is one. That's why throughout the day, you don't have much thought. When it conditions your thought to arise, the mind can be aware of thought too, the mental phenomena. Then after that, it will silent again. Then it will observe whatever that comes to the mind. Then it just understand and it just flow and be with the moment. That's why you can live, truly live life. You know what is living life, right? I have explained this a few times. You better listen again. To live life means what? To be in a state of relaxed inner awareness to experience all of life. Understand not? People or living beings, most of them, they never live. You know what they are doing? They are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. That's why they are never aware. They are never with the moment to realize and experience everything that is going on. They don't have clarity of mind. They cannot experience life. To experience life is to have this silent mind, to be aware, to be with the moment, to experience all of life. The beauty and wonder of every phenomena that arises within your perception, within your mind's awareness. That's why you can be aware. Then you can live, like drinking a tea. Or you go about doing your work, full awareness. Understand not? That is true living. Means you have clarity of what is going on. And you have clarity of mind that know how to act. Because that wisdom, you will know how to act. Because that wisdom is not rigid. That wisdom is what they call understanding. When you understand, you won't get entangled. You just know how to act. And the mind is always peaceful. The mind always flow. That's why the real sati that has the what they call panya behind is very different. But initially when you train your mind to be mindful, you don't try to understand anything. Don't try to like develop any so-called wisdom or understanding. You just do. Train your mind to be aware, that's it. The moment this mind doesn't think and is aware, most of the time, the understanding will come. Because the direct seeing will let you understand. Then you will start to see what happened. How your mental intention condition you into negativity. How you react. How things arise and pass away. Everything become very clear. And the Dhamma become very clear. And all of the words of the Buddha become very clear. That's why you awaken to this truth. You need to be silent to understand all this. If your mind is not silent, if you don't have the daily mindfulness, it's very difficult to arise the wisdom. Wisdom is the most important. Without wisdom, you don't know how to live. Without wisdom, you don't know how to attend to life. You cannot see the defilement. Without wisdom, it can condition you into delusion and get you entangled. And you suffer without knowing why you suffer. That's why wisdom free, nothing else. Not all the meditative state, not all the very fantastic concentration or whatever. Unless those states can bring about wisdom. Otherwise, it's just a condition arising state. It may be a very, very fantastic meditative experience or very wonderful. If you equate that as something to do with enlightenment without checking the wisdom behind, then you can get yourself entangled or misled by what you believe to be true. The real freedom or liberation of mind comes through panya, wisdom, nothing else. And it is panya that frees the mind, nothing else. Without wisdom, your mind is very, very rigid, very conditioned, not at ease, not free. Wisdom is the one that allow you to understand and accept the reality of the moment and echo and flow. And there is a lot of understanding of the nature's law, the right view. And you won't get entangled. You won't create karmic negativity. You understand the Four Noble Truths. You can never get yourself entangled through craving and delusion to condition your suffering no more. That's why the law of dependent origination, also the dwelling, you see very clearly how this form and mind, they get themselves conditioned into all this state is because of this nature's law. The Buddha call it the paticca samuppada. They have this, what they call, 12 links that condition the mind to be what it is. It starts with avijja, ignorance. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, that link is very powerful. Dependent on ignorance, the Buddha always said, sankhara come to be, mental activity come to be. That's why human being who has a lot of delusion and ignorance, they think a lot. Sankhara continuously arising. And because they cannot understand, all of sankhara is impermanent. Sabbe sankhara anicang. All of sankhara is suffering, dukkha. Sabbe sankhara dukkang. Because if you deludedly grasp and cling and give meaning to what your thought tell you, to what your mental activity tell you, suffering will arise. Because through delusion you grasp, cling and hold on to it, thinking that it's permanent, thinking that it's you. And that Sakaya deity is the one that conditions your evil root, your suffering state that arises through your selfishness, your emotion, your anger, your fear, your worry, and like, because you think you are real, you think you exist, you react to all this sense experience. All this you start to see, and you will understand very clearly. No need to have any real teacher. You only need sati, heedfulness, mindfulness. That is your greatest teacher. That's why without sati, the first factor of enlightenment, you cannot start. Because without sati, there is no heedfulness. Without heedfulness, the Buddha said, you are as if dead. And without sati, you cannot investigate the Dhamma. The second factor, enlightenment cannot arise. So without sati, there is no Dhamma vichaya. Without Dhamma vichaya, you cannot have the very strong faith in the Buddha and his teaching. The virya cannot arise. That's why very difficult to break, to really develop the meditation. Okay, you continue. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay, I think it's enough.
Yeah, today good. We still got 20 or minutes. Or anybody else want to report or ask any question? Do you have any question?
I don't have.
Okay. So anybody who wants to ask, you can take the mic from Dr. Chen. Anybody else wants to report or ask any question? Andy, yes, very good.
I go through the understanding through all your teaching. I think that really, you know, the daily mindfulness has improved.
Sadhu, very good.
Very much. And I think the key thing from my experience is the word. And from day one until
it goes in very deep.
Until now, it's the word relax.
Relax, yes. Relax. That is the key.
Once you get into a relaxed situation, then you just feel like your whole body is no hindrances
correct,
at all.
Correct, correct.
And then all those understanding...
It will come. Sadhu to you. Very good.
Because you do not relax, then everything don't seem to connect.
Correct. Because the mind is holding on to something. The reason why human being cannot be relaxed is because there is tension inside you. Understand? And this tension is born of your fear, your worry, your anxiety, and your stress within. That's why human being don't understand. It is so difficult for human being to relax, you know. No? That's why they have to go and exercise until very tired. Then they drop and sleep. Otherwise they say they cannot sleep. Because they don't know how to relax. And for us who know how to meditate, it's so easy to relax. The moment I want to relax, I just lie down, finish. I relax already. Even in the midst of life, I relax. But like what Andy said is very true. When I first developed the cultivation, the daily mindfulness, I remember the first few years, 2 or 3 years, actually, the key thing is to know that you are not relaxed. Because the very subtle defilement, your slight dislike and aversion, that itself makes you not relaxed already, not at ease already. That's why this mind is very cunning. You are so conditioned, understand? By society, by what you have learned, by what you have been taught, the media, the politics, and all those things. So the mind has this tendency to react, and the mind has so much preference. Understand? That's why the sensual desire you. So your mind is very reactive. Very slight thing can make you very reactive. It is the subtle one, because when you cultivate already, especially your right effort, you have already have the ability to develop that right effort to abandon, prevent it from arising. But the subtle one you cannot see. You need sati to see. The very subtle one inside. That's why when you are most of the time aware inside, this subtle reaction and movement come out. Then you start to really become aware. No wonder. The Buddha said, not easy to root out. Then sometimes certain things trigger, then you realize inside the things start, like music and everything. It just come out by itself. Then you realize these are the habitual tendency, the latent tendency, not rooted out yet. That's why you need a lot of sati and wisdom. When sati is there, you see it. Then wisdom to understand what is going on. Then how to reverse all this. That's why when you are silent, you understand. Then the most powerful one is initially when I just relax and silent. Then I realize all this state disappear, dissolve by itself. Because the original state of mind is already stillness, silent. Understand? Meditative state without problem. You only need to relax. That's it. like meditation or like swimming, you only let go, you will float, because the natural body is buoyancy. The state of the body is buoyancy. You let go, don't struggle, don't do anything, the body will float. So your mind is the same. You don't hold on to anything. You don't stir the mind. You don't create fear, worry, anxiety, and stress. Without all this content, it's already in a meditative state of calmness, peace, relax, awareness. Then because of that understanding, that wisdom give you a lot of joy, understand that? That's why the joy, the peace, the understanding just come by itself, because you know how to relax. The key is relax. If you are not relaxed, you cannot meditate. Stress is everywhere. Yeah. That's why the word is at ease, 自在. Yeah. Physically and mentally at ease. Yeah. Without stress, totally without stress. And it's so difficult, you know that. I only managed to be aware in the year 1986, I remember, when I take refuge under Master Xuan Hua. For the first time I saw this monk, he really so relaxed and the mind so free. And I also don't know why I can see. I was just mindful, full of faith and joy. Then suddenly I saw him, that state, that mind, I can feel like I'm inside him, without craving, without any stress, totally free and at ease. That's why I can feel that state inside me, and I know what that state is. That's why after that, my daily mindfulness is very easy. Then I understand what is the free mind. That's why you need to develop the wisdom yourself. Like Andy is very good. She picked it up. Then he, through his own daily mindfulness cultivation, come to realize the important points. These are the things that can actually help you to speed up your understanding and wisdom. And it can help to trigger off the awakening. Because a lot of things that I came to understand is through my own understanding that comes about because of daily mindfulness. That's all. I can tell you, without daily mindfulness, you are dead. The wisdom cannot come, I tell you. The true wisdom, the real Dhamma, it is from the daily mindfulness. You are so aware and mindful until your mind is so different. Very little thinking, very little thought process. That's why the mundane mind, finally, it can collapse and no more. Then there is a very fine mind. They call it the supramundane mind. That new mind, you have to learn how to use it. You have to learn how to use it to live life. I remember that mind, very funny. When it happened, when the mundane mind collapsed, when this supramundane mind is actually your nature shine forth, the awareness nature. Without that gross mundane thinking mind anymore, the whole thing disappeared. Like a whole layer of consciousness suddenly just drop off. But there is a process for it to happen. It took a few months for me. I saw it happening. That's why later on I told some of the very close Kayana Mita who are doing it quite near already. I said, you remember to watch out for this phase. Because once the mundane mind collapse, you cannot look back anymore because no more there already. I want to develop the understanding of the difference between the two. Understand? Last time when you are with that and without that, because that face, if you don't see, you cannot teach, I tell you. It's difficult for you to teach. But there is a big difference between the two faces. And the few months that I had, I treasure it so much. I keep on checking my mind state. That's why I saw from the very gross, from the very, very, what they call, deluded and heedless one, a lot of ignorant one, how it slowly, slowly transformed. Then how this mundane mind, slowly before it collapsed, a few months before that, I think 6 to 9 months, how the thing changed. Step by step it changed. The clinging, the grasping, the what they call activity, not only it start to slow down, a lot of things happen. It's like that. I cannot tell you unless there is condition. Because all these things just happened during that time. Then I knew these are very important things. But then it happened too fast. Before I even have enough time to study all this, suddenly one day it just, the whole thing just gone. But before it happened, I know a lot of things happened. The brain here, a lot. That's why your whole brain become different. Your whole brain is transformed, I tell you. It's very different type of brain. That's why this brain is not like the normal brain. This one has the energy, has the wisdom, has the intelligence. And this one cannot grasp, cannot hold. That's why this one can have memory, but no problem. Understand? It's so different. Totally different. And the whole brain, I realize, is so different. This is so light, so free. Totally without anything there. And the whole of this movement of, you call it thought, actually like no thought inside. Because it's like a formless thing. There is no image, nothing inside here. It's so different. They call it the arupa thought, the formless thought. Because there is very, the flow of this sankhara is totally different. The supramundane one is so fine, so subtle and so different, totally different. Not like last time. Last time you can feel the suffering. The suffering is so sensitive. Even the moment of feeling, awareness of that Vedana aggregate. So much suffering. The moment of perception, knowing. Because that time when the mind is so mindful about the collapse, every moment of consciousness, the aggregate are so clear. You can be at the moment of feeling, at the moment of perception, at the moment of consciousness, at the moment of activity of mind. Even the sankhara, how it moves. The mindfulness is so different. It can be vivid. And the arising of thought, the arising of feeling and perception, the even try to know, is so much suffering inside the mind. The very fine suffering, so strong. Then you like, you know, the nature tell you, you want to suffer? Go and use your mind. Go and use your mind. Continue to go and use your mind. At that time, I was still working. I can't even read letter, I tell you. So much suffering, even to perceive the word. To read one letter is like not easy. Because the mind becomes so sensitive. Then there was so much joy at that time. There was no fear, no panic. Because I was lucky. I already very experienced in my engineering type of work. Because I do a lot of contracts. I do a lot of engineering contracts. I'm a very good project manager and director. I direct project and I actually plan. I design, plan, then document everything. I'm very good at specification, very good at documentation, very good at the condition of contract, everything. So because of that, I don't need to read. I only need to go through certain vital data before I go for meeting. And that time I realized even to read the client letter, when is the meeting and what other agenda, is like not easy. But I skim through very fast. I only look at those that are relevant to our side. Then when I see, I understand. Sometimes I need to check the date because towards the end of the project, they got this claim, variation order and all those things. So you have to check the date, who is responsible and all those things, and what are the important letter. So at that time, very strange. Then he understand that finally the wisdom just come. Everything is just sankhara. He know you, he know me. Think also like that, don't think also like that. The world is still the world. This moment, this form and mind can just disappear. You can call it death, no more problem. It got no more thought like, ayo, I haven't planned my things. I haven't written my will. I haven't even decide who to do this and or give my... No more such thought. It just, inside just understand. This moment it can just finish, no more. Not a problem too. Because no reality, it's just form and mind, sankhara, everything. think also like that, don't think also like that. That's why the mind cannot think. The mind every moment want to be silent. Every moment want to be silent. That's why the stillness keep on coming. The stillness keep on coming. Then after that, the cessation keep on happening. It just happened by itself. And that was 20 over years ago. And that time, nobody can understand. Even my teacher don't teach me all this. But it just happened. It just come. That's why the true Dhamma is not what people think. That's why at that time I cannot share. There was no condition. I can't do anything. I just stay at home. Then those who have affinity, who knows me, they come. But very few at that time. But my wife know a lot. Because I did discuss with her. Oh, we still got 8 minutes. Today lucky, we got more time. Otherwise, normally Q&A, I got less than 20 minutes. Today, I think I got 45 minutes. That's why you must ask questions for condition to arrive. Because Andy has done the daily mindfulness. Otherwise, I cannot speak all this. Because this is beyond. You all cannot understand. And all this, you may not know, is important. Luckily, it's recorded. Well, later on, when you cultivate, you will understand all this. You listen again, then you realize, so beautiful. This is what that can happen. And all this thing.
Sister. Okay, Brother Toh, regarding the daily mindfulness, when I come to sloth and torpor, I have experienced once, and when you are very tired, you really feel very sleepy during the meditation. But if you have cultivate the daily mindfulness, it temporarily, just very quick, it take over. That means there is a very stable feeling that is like a switch over.
Yes.
Then you go into tranquil state, calmness, and a very strong faith and energy. Is it?
Yeah. You don't have to worry about all this, because when you are sitting, let's say sloth and torpor arise, you don't have to worry. Sloth and torpor, you must know how to deal with it. Sometimes, like I explained just now, it's a test. Sometimes because your bodily condition tired. If your body condition tired, go and sleep. Forget about meditation. When you sleep and lie down, you are meditating actually, because you can be aware. Then when you are in the sitting, the sloth and torpor come is the best. Because this is what the Buddha actually taught. The Dhamma Nupassana. Dhamma Nupassana, the first category of practice is the five hindrances of mind. You have to be aware. When these hindrances of sloth and torpor is there, you have to be aware. Then you have to find out how the arising of the non-arisen hindrance of mind come to be. Because before that, there was no sloth and torpor. Then how come suddenly it comes? So you have to trace the origination factor. Then later on, you observe through your mindfulness and awareness. You realize you don't fight it. You don't go and tell yourself, meditation, I must not be sleepy. This is a hindrance. I must not have this hindrance. If you think like that, you get trapped. Because the hindrance of mind is a natural state that will arise when the condition is there for it to arise. So you have to accept them for what they are. You only need to understand why they are there. Then through that understanding, retrospectively, you know how to reverse it. But you don't force it to go. That's why you be aware and accept that reality. Then you want to find out. That's why you go with it. You are just aware of that sloth and torpor. When you are aware without reaction, when you don't fight, you realize the shift of consciousness just happened. All of a sudden, this sloth and torpor, for no reason, because of your ability to accept the reality of the moment and be with it, then you realize this energy without craving. You know what is craving or not? Your sensual desire to change this sloth and torpor, to do away, to push away, where you have aversion, dislike, that is a hindrance. That's why you cannot gain back your sati and peacefulness. When you understand this is a hindrance, you only silence your mind and accept this reality. I did it before. That's why once I break that, it doesn't come back to me anymore. I just silence and follow it. Then it shifts.
then all of a sudden the awareness come back, everything come back. Then sometimes the shift of consciousness is so strong, such in energies, that sloth and topple no more. And then you know, you pass the test. It doesn't come and affect you anymore. Like anger. Do not be deluded. A lot of cultivators get trapped. You know what they say? Anger is an evil root. Understand? Not? Greed, hatred, and delusion. So anger. Anger is a hindrance of mine. I must not have anger. Then a lot of them say, after cultivating so long, going for retreat, in and out of retreat, 20, 30 years, how come I still can get angry? Then they cling to this state, thinking that anger is them. I still have anger. That is where the delusion is. Anger is not you, understand or not? Anger is an emotion, a feeling, understand or not? Sankara, mental state. How does it arise? It come and go. It's condition arising. Before the anger was there, it was never there, understand or not? Then when anger is there, when it change, it arise, sustain itself, then when it disappear, you didn't die there. So how can anger be you? So you must understand, anger is not you. It's condition arising. That's why you trace the origination factor. How does it arise? And most of the time, it's because of delusion. You want things your way. You cannot accept nature's way. When things don't go your way, you get angry. Understand? You get unhappy. It's either through what you see, what you hear, or what you think. You are not at peace. That's why you lack wisdom. That's why it stirs the mind react. That anger, unhappiness. Sometimes it's aversion or slight dislike. Later on, it becomes very subtle. The slight dislike. Even when you smell something pungent, I remember. There is wisdom, there is understanding. But there is still this very subtle dislike. Even though you have the understanding. And then you realize, you smile. It's still there. Understand not? It's not rooted out yet. Yeah. That's why that wisdom is not easy to really root it out. That's why it's not easy to even become an anagami, I tell you. To be completely free of sensual desire, you will. But that wisdom, when it comes, no problem. Because you understand, this is not you. And it cannot arise. It cannot arise. Understand not? The craving, the anger cannot arise because you know it's conditioned arise, it's through delusion that it arises. And when you understand, the mind that understands free. That's why understanding, wisdom, free, liberate. The moment you understand, you are free. You no need to do anything. You no need to cut here, cut there, cut at the feeling. Forget about it. This is what people who don't understand tell you. The one who understands, nothing to cut. That's why I say wisdom you cannot learn. Either you have or you don't have. The yoni so manasikara is like that. If you have the wisdom, wise attention at the moment of sense experience, then it know what to do. The mind understand, it know what to do. But if you don't have, you try to cut, you try to do everything, it's still your thought doing. Nothing to do with wisdom. And you are deludedly deluding yourself, thinking that you can follow the book or what people tell you. Cut at the feeling. Every time the feeling come, I don't want to get angry. You know what you do? You suppress. You yan. When you suppress, it's totally different. When there is wisdom, you no need to suppress. You can see, you can smell, you can taste, you can hear. No problem. Like the lotus above the pond. But when you fear, that's why I say, oh, I must not listen. I don't want to listen. This make me angry, make me emotional. So what you do? You suppress. Then you like try to change your thought. I don't want to listen. I just want to maintain peace. I don't want to get angry. This is all suppression. Understand? You suppress. Like smoking. If I give you smoking as an example, you will know. Smoking means what? People say smoking is bad, isn't it? Can cause cancer, isn't it? Lung cancer also. So what you do? You try to kick the habit in there. But you cannot kick in there. So when you see people suffer, you determine, okay, I don't want to smoke. So for a few days you suppress. Because you don't use wisdom. You don't see the danger of smoking. You don't wake up to it. So what you do? One day, 2 days, 3 days. after that inside very strong. Very strong. That's why they replace with eating sweet. But then after a few days, one day they see somebody smoke, oh, that desire, that craving so strong, but you suppress it. Then what happened? You go somewhere, people offer to you. Wow, inside fighting. Cannot, but inside one. Then the moment you take that stick, I tell you, you become more addicted. Because that very path becomes so strong. Because it's like drug addict. Suddenly receive drug. So you see how this craving actually works. And I saw it in my father and my eldest brother. Especially my eldest brother. My father very good. He actually, he's a chain smoker. He smoked until he know it's bad for health. Then he suddenly kicked the habit. So we all thought he kicked already. You know what happened? Suddenly one day somebody sells cigar, come to him. He kicked the cigarette, he smoked cigar. Actually he didn't kick. Until he got certain sickness. Then he gave up completely. But my eldest brother was the best. He like my father. Chain smoker. Non-stop. You tell him anything also, he don't care. He said, smoke also, die. Don't smoke also, die. He said, some who don't smoke also die early. He got this type of view one last time. So what he did was, he just couldn't care less he smoked. Excuse me. He got some classmate who also smoked. Then you know what happened one day, when he was at the age of 40-something. Suddenly one phone call came. His very good friend, very close friend, also smoker, developed some form of pain. So admitted hospital. He went and see him. The doctor checked. Then the doctor explain to him, you better stop your smoking, otherwise you die. He said, your lung already got cancer inside. That's why you have pain. He said, you cough and all those things. And you know what happened? My brother saw him die 3 days later. From that moment onward, he come back until today, he never smoked. Not a single stick, not even any cigar. This is wake up, understand not? If you think your life is not precious, you go ahead. That's why when you understand with wisdom, you wake up. You never do it again. Not through suppression, understand not? Suppression, you always justify. After a while, the thought will come and tell you, once a while, okay. Maybe no need to be like before. Chain smoke, a little bit, okay. Then like precept, they say, middle path, drink a little bit. So middle path, don't go to the extreme. This is all justification through the thought, understand not? The thought is by nature egoic and has this craving. It always justifies its own action and speech. That's why I never think. Forget about the thought. Just tell yourself, sankara anicang. Then you tell the thought, the mind, enough. Now I decide, not you. Because the thought is the one that conditions you through the mental intention. Get angry at this fellow. Anger is evil root. This is all the thought tell you. It's not wisdom. The moment you understand when there is wisdom, you decide yourself inside. Tell the thought, enough. Then the thought keep on coming and haunt you, tempt you, condition you into doing this and that. That's why your mental intention is very powerful. But when there is wisdom, you see clearly. All these are sankara. And sankara anicang. If you grab and cling, give meaning, it causes you suffering. That's why all of your pleasure, your desire, your craving, come from your thought, nothing else. If you don't give meaning to your thought, the mind sees. There is nothing. Nothing to condition this pleasure, this craving at all. It sees things as they are. It understands clearly and it knows what this is. And it will know how to act. The mind is liberated, free, at ease. That's why wisdom, free, nothing else. Okay? We better end. I think I took up extra of your time. 4 minutes. Okay. We will do the usual. Okay.
Okay, sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata chabamata devanaga mahindika punyantanga namoditwa chirang rakantu lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed ones. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hantu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hantu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hantu nyatayo. Let this marriage accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all do be well and happy. Okay, the next one is invoke the blessing for the country and our people. Devo vasatu kalina sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rainfall in due season, and may there be a rich and good harvest all around, and may the world be peaceful and prosperous always, and may the government of the day, the king and the ruler, be righteous. Okay, we will make the aspiration. Compose your mind and do it with understanding and faith. Do it sincerely. Itmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patya. By the grace of this merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.
All right.